Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Missing Link for SLPs podcast. I'm Maddie, and you are listening to an episode in our podcast series, Oh, the Places You Will Go, an SLP Spotlight, where I get to interview speech pathologists who have interesting positions in our field, from the very basic to the most interesting spots, places, people they work with, and all of that in between. I get to have the fun of just chatting with these SLPs, finding out what they do, how they got their jobs, and any words of advice they have for other SLPs. So listen as we explore all the wonderful things an SLP can do. Here we are with Ashley. Ashley, I am glad you are here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You have a story you want to tell.
Yeah.
Tell me who you are.
So, like you said, my name is Ashley. I am in the middle of, supposed to be nearing the end of my clinical fellowship. I work at a day school for children with disabilities. We have both preschool and school age. So the buildings are right across the street from one another. I travel between the two. We had a lot of self-contained rooms, a few integrated rooms, and then we also have, they're called RAVE and MOVE classrooms. RAVE is like a strictly autism classroom, and MOVE is mobility opportunities via education. So a lot of those kiddos have, you know, a lot of different equipment, such as, you know, standing walkers, wheelchairs, different types of Riftons, stuff like that, that they use to travel to and from the around the school, I guess.
Are you based? Where are you based? What part of the country and big city?
I'm in upstate New York.
Aha.
The real upstate.
No accents on your part that I can hear.
Nope.
I have to be careful saying that, though, because on this podcast, there's a lot of speech paths listening with a very trained ear.
Yeah, that's right.
So upstate New York in a city, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's a little small. So if you're familiar, it's like an hour north of Albany. So it's, I mean, I don't know really the population, but we have, you know, like Lake George by Saratoga. So we're up there. It's a city-ish. Lots of trees, though.
It's beautiful. I'm from Minnesota. Yeah. Lakes and trees.
Yep.
How far are you into your clinical fellow?
So I graduated from my grad program in December. So I started my clinical fellow in January.
All right.
So I really only got like 2.5 months, and then COVID happened. So now, since then, I've just been doing teletherapy. All the meetings are online, everything like that. So I got a true CF experience for like a little, well, probably 2 months, and then that all happened.
So here's a question: how do you think your clinical fellow? What's your clinical fellow like now? You gave us just a couple of details on everything's teletherapy and your meetings. How about new grads? How do you think that's going to go with COVID?
I definitely think you need to, before you accept, I think you need to make sure that your supervisor or a supervisor is, you know, willing to, because everyone's had to learn about, you know, teletherapy and adapt to the new norm, as everyone's saying, but make sure that your supervisor is comfortable or as comfortable as they can be in that, because I've looked to my supervisor for a ton of support, whether it's just different Chrome extensions, because we use Google Meet, you know, to be able to do dual screens so you can see, you know, the student as well as what you're presenting, because it's a lot of, you know, mixing. I used to be so nervous, and every time my computer went, you'd see the little circle as you're waiting, and I would be like, oh God, how's it going to go? Like, do I have enough stuff ready? I would be so, I think, overprepared. Mm-hmm. And now I just kind of go in, and my supervisor was really like, go back to the basics. Like, don't worry about, you know, like printing off all these things and like trying to do this type of game. Like, I'm using their toys. I'm using something simple as just like, one of my kids had Easter eggs, and we were like, you know, he loved to pop them open. So we were like hiding things inside the Easter eggs, taking a lot of their toys that they're already interested in, not trying to do a therapist-driven activity, you know, that you want them to be interested in. So I don't know. I just don't be nervous about it. I know it's easier to say than to do, but it's hard. And like everyone's having that issue. And that's what my supervisor kept reiterating to me. She's like, everyone's having, you know, the frozen parts of it, you know, where like the video just stops working in between, or the audio. And then I've had to stop a Google Meet and pick up with FaceTime. Like, so it's just, you just kind of got to go with the flow, really.
And sounds a lot more patient-centered.
Yes, 100%.
Functional, because it's at home.
Yeah, functional, like, is the key. I mean, that's the key for us right now anyway. A lot of, because my kiddos are so severe, that functional is, like, what you want to do. So, yes, you do need that, like, that academic readiness stuff. But at the same time, like, you want, how can I make this child, you know, be able to say, or use a device to you to say, you know, I want to go to the bathroom, even, you know, something as simple as that, or like teaching them an approximation of a sign, or anything like that. So functional based, you know, right now, I have a couple kids, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, that it's just them tolerating me on the screen. Now we've taken it so far back because, you know, they can't make the connection of, oh, Miss Ashley's the same person on the computer screen as she is when I see her in my classroom. So functional is very key. Yeah.
So we did an augmentative communication. We started an evaluation in our clinic yesterday with one of the student clinicians. And I can see how online therapy is going to have a significant impact in the AAC world. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, so I actually have one student using Touch Chat on his iPad. And then I have probably two or three using PECS. That is challenging in that, I'll start with my high-tech kiddo first. He, using his Touch Chat, I actually had to go back to the school and get, I don't have the same layout as him, unfortunately, because I picked him up halfway through the summer. So at least I have Touch Chat, and so does he. So I try to communicate, because we're working on, you know, engaging conversation, initiating conversation. So we kind of talk back and forth between our using Touch Chat. I've found with my AAC kids, it's a lot of parent counseling and education. So how I would prompt them in person. Mm-hmm. I try to teach them how to do that. It's hard to, you do face that challenge of, okay, I can't see his layout, so I can't help if he can't find something. You know, I'm like, okay, so on my side, this is how I see it. Do you have this, you know? Mm-hmm. So I try to keep it reusing, you know, to target that goal. I try to keep it so that we really only, you know, go back and forth in conversation a couple times, because I also don't want him to get frustrated because of, you know, luckily he can spell. So sometimes he'll resort to that if needed, but it takes him a longer time now, I think. And then with my PECS kids, I have to make sure that I have the picture icon sent to them already, or I have to do something that involves the picture icons that he has. So it's, you know, a lot of times I find myself doing a lot of things with colors, just because that's a lot of what he has. And then I've made different movies that he likes. So he'll request with, you know, the I want, and then the movie, and then we'll put it on the sentence strip. So just trying different ways to be able to communicate using their iPad. I wish I could like get my hands on the iPad and just like put everything that he would use at home, you know, cause no one knows how to edit the pages and add the icons or hide icons that we're not using. Although he's recently learned, 20 minutes into the session, he'll be like, I want goodbye. I'm like, oh no, he already wants to leave. He's done it the past two times. I'm like, I'm proud of you for saying that, because we're working on, you know, using two to three word sentences. So I do grant that request, but it's challenging, but it's funny.
So let's take a step backwards. why did you want to become a speech pathologist? And why did you move into this area of, you know, such challenging clients?
Yeah. So I always knew kids. I was in between education or speech pathology. I came across in high school. I don't really even know how. I just was like thinking I've always been interested in special education. So that's just kind of like a branch, a more specialized branch, I guess, off of special education services. So I just kind of went for it. And then I did my undergrad in communication sciences and disorders. And then I did some observations in a school before, you know, I made the decision for grad school and all that. I actually took a year off between undergrad and grad to work in a special education classroom, just once again, to make sure that, you know, I did want to go speech, because the kids in all of my, I was in a self-contained kindergarten classroom and all of them got speech. So I was able to really truly see both sides. And then I ended up, you know, applying to grad school. I got in. So I ended up doing both at one time just so I could finish out the school year. And then it really, I decided this population when I got my clinical placement in a school. I was actually in a move room, which is what I mentioned earlier, all nonverbal, all using different types of equipments and different dining things. And I was like, wow, I really like this severity of it. It's not your typical like articulation that you think of when you go to a school. You know, we were using different types of cups and spoons and working really closely with all types of professionals. You know, I had teacher of the deaf, teacher of the visually impaired, all your related service providers. So I got a very true experience and I was like, I like this. And so then I always knew about this school because it's right where I grew up. And so I kind of graduated, they had an opening and here we are.
What has been one of the most challenging parts of your position?
I think, well, I did take, you know, I had AAC, I had pediatric swallowing, I had regular, you know, adult swallowing. It's still, and then I had my clinical placement. It was still hard to make sure, like, be confident and make sure, you know, that you're able to, I guess, take what you learn and apply it. But I found that it's like for PECs, for example, in my AAC course, we really focused on high tech. We did focus on low tech, but not strictly PECs. So I'm like, oh my goodness, I don't know. There's so many different types of prompting you use with PECs to work your way up the hierarchy. And luckily we had, I think it ended up being 3 like staff development days that focused on just PECs. And I've done, I think, 2 of them. So that was helpful, but it's challenging to make sure that you're really honoring what they're saying and making sure. I mean, I was like, oh God, how did I pass this course? You know, like, but it's really just, you know, asking for help. And at first I struggled with, I don't want to ask for too much help. Like yes, I'm new in the field, but I've graduated. I've done my 400 clinical plus hours. Like, I should know what I'm doing, but, you know, I got over that pretty quickly, luckily. But it serves its challenges sometimes.
Well, so that takes us to our next question. Then what piece of advice would you give the new clinical fellow coming in who's like ready to launch, into her clinical fellow?
I think definitely like find your organization system. So luckily my first like week, I was doing a lot of observing my kiddos with a therapist that, you know, I was taking them from. I made like a little layout for each kid. I wrote down, you know, what they're motivated by, different like special, like, are they an elopement risk? I mean, they'll tell you that anyway, but like different, you know, make sure you know about we do a lot of dining. So make sure you know if they're on a regular diet or are they on a CHOP diet. You know what communication system they're using. Sometimes their IEP is so, I mean, it's up to date, but at the same time, they could have made a lot of progress since the IEP was written, or they could have, you know, regressed from there. So really really look at where your kiddo is at that point in time and then go from there. And then those little sheets that I made helped me because I was adding to them. And then I was kind of planning my sessions through there because it's a lot of rapport building at first. I built rapport for probably like a lot of my kids are high frequency. So I would say like 10 sessions for some kids just to build that trust. And, you know, that's the big key, rapport and organization, I think. But don't like go crazy with the organization, because I started doing that and I'm like, take a step back, Ashley, like just focus on, I think, cause I'm trying to be like, I want to be like, you know, like the teachers pay teachers, SLPs, you know, they're like so organized. So like, but it's, I mean, it's hard, but don't go crazy.
What is one of the things you love most about your job?
I try to make them, when they see my face, a lot of them, you know, you want to make them want to come with you or want to hang out with you. You know, a lot of them are like, oh no, my speech teacher. But I try to make it, you know, we're always doing games that they are activities that they like. And then at the end they can earn a game that they want or a little clip that they want to see. I try to do that. Some of my kids, like one, you know, you see the challenging behaviors that they present and stuff like that, but I don't know. It's tricky.
If you had to do this all over again, what would you do?
I would keep it the same probably. I'm learning a ton where I'm at. You know, I'm learning different types of strategies behaviorally and also, you know, in AAC, in language, I feel like I actually like the most now. I feel like I've learned a lot more, and I used to be like, oh no, I really love, you know, I actually really like articulation. I like AAC, but I'm like, I like language now. There's so much you can do just with something so simple, like a, you know, walking down the hall, for example. If I pick my kid up from the bus and to start the session, like so many different language opportunities in the hallway, working on the social pragmatics of saying hello to everyone, you know, looking, eye contact, things like that. And that where I'm at now has definitely helped me with those. So I would not change anything. I have a strong support system. My supervisor is great. I think that's key too. You don't want to be like too, she's really great. She will always, you know, ask me if I need help, but she's always there via email, phone call, text, or something so simple. So I feel like new CFs coming in, new grads, you want to develop that relationship with your supervisor. It definitely helps.
Sounds like good advice.
Yeah. I try.
The clinical fellows that I've supervised, I've been on site with. Some I haven't. And the ones that I haven't, I think they've just felt more like an island.
Yeah.
So establishing that communication and that support system is important.
Yeah. And now it's, I mean, I used to see her, our desks were right next to each other. I used to see her every single day. And so now we're not seeing each other as much, but we do, you know, a Google Meet. We're usually on like once, sometimes more than once a week. She supervises, so for teletherapy, she has to supervise a teletherapy session for each. So we had to, let me back up. We had to sign a consent form from parents had to sign a consent form in order to do teletherapy. So once they've signed the consent form, she sits in on the first session just in case I need, you know, a little bit of help. And then also the direct supervision portion of it. And then after those sessions, we usually hang on for a little bit. We talk about how we think the session went. We talk about, you know, any other issues or something else that's come up that week or since we last spoke. We talk about different types of, you know, okay, did you get, what type of hours have you gotten this week type of thing. So it's, and any types of like, oh, I found this the other day. I think this will be helpful with this kid that you have, something like that. So definitely helpful.
Do you have a favorite resource you'd like to share?
I've really, Instagram is where you have to go for that. Texas Speech Mom is really great. I follow another clinical fellowship. Shelby is her name. I can't remember her handle, but she does a lot of Texas Speech Mom stuff. But they all, Adventures in Speech Pathology, like they all provide very like different types of things you can do. They're providing, you know, I think it was Texas Speech Mom. She usually uses like a feed the shark thing and it's a stuffed animal. And she found at the dollar store, she found like a swim floaty that you put in your arm. That's a shark. And so that you can easily sanitize. Like I would have never thought of that. So you can, you know, where the shark's mouth is actually where your arm goes in. So it's perfect to still feed the shark, like just different things like that. I would have never thought of that. So Instagram is like been my goat. My screen time is way up on my phone because I'm scrolling all the time, but it's worth it.
Excellent. There's a fun Facebook group I follow. I think it's like SLPs who love Target.
Oh, I need that.
And they find like they go to the Target and they find things in the dollar bin or the $3 and they use them. They create these therapy activities with them. And I'm like, well, that's a good idea. Same thing. I would not have thought of that. We don't have to reinvent the wheel, Ashley.
No,
like, I need to learn and watch and observe and implement.
Yep. Target dollar section is my favorite. I was going there like 2 times a week. I've backed off, thank God. But during this time at home, I'm like, all my stuff is here. And I have accumulated so much stuff just from going to Target and the dollar store and like Amazon. And oh, my supervisor gave me a lot of books and some puzzles. And my sister had, I have a niece and nephew, and I'm looking at all my stuff. They were getting rid of puzzles. I'm like, I'll take them, you know? So I've accumulated a ton of stuff, which is great. But oh, my room is looking like a mess.
You're not alone. I'm sure. You're not alone. So final question before we are done, would you share an inspirational story with us where you really felt like this is why I do what I do, the power of a therapist?
Yes. So one kiddo, he's a school age kiddo. When I took him on, this was actually in January, when I took him on, he was switching classrooms. He was going from a classroom that, I mean, it was structured, but it was a little less structured than where he was headed to. So he was starting mornings in his old classroom and then transitioning to afternoon in the other classroom. And it just so happened to be that I had him scheduled during that transition time. And this is a kiddo that really struggles with transitions. He's a very visual learner. So, you know, we screaming in the hallway and a lot of his screams are for attention. So we try to ignore, he pushes buttons and he gets the phone button because he likes that auditory sensory input. So, okay, how can I get him to get to this classroom, which was kind of a far way? I was a little nervous, you know, without, you know, trying to go in every door, because if the classrooms left the doors open, he was trying to go in and screaming and rolling on the floor and pushing you away. So the first transition actually went pretty smoothly. It didn't take too long, but I had a couple that took, you know, our entire 30-minute session. So what I did was, I'm like, okay, he's a visual learner. Let me take pictures of where we're going. So I got my iPad and I took pictures of his classroom. I took pictures of the hallway that we were walking in, different signs that we were walking by. And then I took pictures of his classroom, where he sits. And so I printed them out. And before we started the session, you know, he always saw me and he would drop his things and look at me and smile. So we built that rapport pretty quickly. Then I would come in with the pictures and I would say, okay, you know, this is where we're going today. We have a little bit of work. I do a lot of sign with him too. and then we're going to go to this classroom, you know, and as we're walking in the hallway, I gave him that little, I put it in like one of those dry erase sleeves, and he would carry it in the hallway, and he was looking around and he's smiling. And I was like, oh my God, we're going to make it to the classroom without a disruption, without, you know, him dropping to the floor. And so, you know, I kept reiterating and I kept pointing and I kept saying, yep, you do it. This is where we are. You see, it's the same. And I was really like, you know, drawing his attention to the pictures and to where we were in the hallways. And we got into the classroom and I'm like, oh my goodness, thank God. But everyone was like, I can't believe that just happened. Like he didn't, I mean, he maybe dropped like once, but he got right back up when I, you know, giving the quick cues and the prompts. And everyone was like, those pictures seem to really work for him. And I was like, yes, like something, talk about going back to the basics. Like you don't need a this elaborate, like, visual schedule and all of this stuff. All I did was took pictures of the actual hallway and printed them and let him hold them as we walked. And, you know, it's not really, I mean, it is communication based in a way, but it's not something that you would typically think of as a speech pathologist's job, I guess, you know, but that was so like, I felt so good leaving that session. And I was like, he's in his new classroom. We didn't have a huge issue in the hallway and he was happy. He wasn't like crying and screaming and he just sat down with his friends. And it was, I was like, wow, I did that, you know? So it was good. It was definitely, it made me feel like I did my job right, and that I made this child ready for his day, starting off in his new classroom in a great way. And I felt good. And even the teachers, you know, like everyone saying like, I saw you with him in the hallway. Like that was so great. How did you do that? You know, his OT was asking me. So it made me feel good. And like, I feel like, you know, you have those moments and you will have those moments, and it just reminds you of like why you wanted to be in this profession and why you wanted to work with the population that you're with.
Mm-hmm. And going back to those very basic things, taking that knowledge and applying it in just such a simple, functional, patient or client focused way.
Exactly. Exactly.
Excellent story. Excellent. And it's good to remember too, just to go back to the basics.
Yeah. I, especially during this time, because starting in the fall, whether you're in person or virtual or a hybrid, like I feel it's sad to say, but there is a ton of regression in these kids. So really taking a step back, looking at them as almost like a new student in a way, and figuring out, okay, don't try to come up with these elaborate plans, Ashley. Just go to the basics, you know, use what's on their table in front of them. Use, you know, if you're still doing virtual, use their toys again at home. I also don't start my sessions off right away with a speech activity or a language activity. I really make sure I greet them for, you know, at least 5 minutes really. I feel like it's like you're building rapport. Even though they see me every week on the computer, you're still building that rapport, if that makes sense, in the initial first 5 minutes of the session. And you're going to have to do that again in the fall too, if you're in person, you know, because they haven't seen you since March. So basics.
Basics, basics. Your time today.
Yeah, thank you.
Today's conversation has created some aha moments for you and motivated you to become a better SLP, continuing to connect some of those missing links between what you know and how to use that knowledge. Thank you for downloading the Missing Link for SLPs podcast. And if you enjoyed the show, I'd love you to subscribe, rate it, and leave a short review. Also, please share an episode with a friend. Together, we can raise awareness and help more SLPs find and connect those missing links and get the information needed to help them feel confident in their patient care every step of the way. Follow me on Instagram and join the Fresh SLP community on Facebook. Show notes are always available, so come learn more at freshslp.com. Let's make those connections. You got this.